The thing that I think is so great about it is that as a small business, you often, and even mid-sized business, you often cannot afford that full-time C-suite or expert hire. This is true for CFO, marketers, etc. And so the great thing about a fractional person is you can get 10, 20 hours from an expert at a rate you can afford, and it becomes that win-win where they're bringing that expertise from their, you know, other clients, past experiences to your business, and you're getting them for just a portion of their hours.
Welcome to Management Development Unlocked, where you will learn how to nurture a world-class management team. And now your host, Eric Girard.
Hey, welcome back to Management Development Unlocked. I am thrilled that you're here. Please remember to review the show. This will really help it grow and reach more listeners. Today, I am delighted to have Kristen Cummings with me. Kristen, welcome to the show. Who are you and what do you do?
Thank you for having me, Eric. So yeah, my name is Kristen. I run Virtual COO. We do strategy and operations for small to mid-sized businesses. And my family and I travel full time. So we live on the road, traveling at first America and now the world with our five-year-old son.
Oh my gosh. And right now you're in Switzerland, is that right?
We just moved to France on Saturday. We were in Switzerland last week. Yep, we're in France this week. So
yeah,
we are on the Europe part of our journey right now.
My, that is so amazing. Man,
it's been amazing.
Right on. Yeah, we should do another episode where we just talk about all your travels.
I would love to. That is my most fun thing to talk about, although I love my business and what I do. But being able to travel as a result of being remote has been just a lifelong dream. So
yeah, that's amazing. Good for you. Great. So you're sitting in what looks like an amazingly cozy room in France, hanging out, and we're going to have a good chat. So let's do it.
I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. So our focus today is how new managers can work with C-suite leaders and stakeholders. And as you mentioned, you're a virtual COO or a fractional COO. So could you define what does COO mean? And what does a COO do?
Sure. So COO stands for Chief Operating Officer. And much like a CEO, I would say it's one of the lesser defined C-suite roles, meaning it changes depending on the needs of the business. In general, obviously, it oversees operations, all things operations. But for a big corporation, that may often look like somebody who is being groomed to take over the corporation. So they're, you know, training directly under the CEO. They have a lot of their own responsibilities. They're maybe starting to take on teams that report to them, et cetera. In smaller businesses, the ideal setup, in my opinion, for a COO is the visionary integrator model. Usually what you see with these CEOs of small businesses is they are visionaries, they're idea people, they got the company started, and then there comes a point where they can't do it all themselves anymore. That COO really steps in as a partner to take the things off the CEO's plate that they're not good at, so the CEO can focus on what only they can do. That means that there are some things that typically fall in the COO's world, operations in general, oftentimes in hiring, maybe budgeting and finance. I've seen events, I've seen marketing actually fall under the COO, but it's going to look a little different in each company depending on the strengths of that CEO, if that makes sense. So to me, finding that right fit is key in this role.
All right. So that was the first point I wanted to make in this episode, was demystifying this kind of vague C-suite person who actually has a ton of responsibility and needs to be kind of a jack of all trades, if you will, to keep the organization running when it hits a particular size. Is that an accurate summary?
Absolutely. I think a COO often is that jack of all trades. And what happens a lot in my experience and in what I've seen is a COO will get a big new initiative or project started. They'll take that vision, they'll turn it into a strategic plan, and then they will hand it off to a team. And oftentimes at that point, bring in an expert. So like I've, for example, with some of my clients, kicked off marketing initiatives. I'm not a marketer, but I got the right people in the room. I know how to take that vision, turn it into this, and then hand it off to the experts. So the jack of all trades is a great way to look at this role.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, you are a virtual or a fractional COO. So what does it look like to have a virtual or a fractional COO in a role?
So I love the fractional world. When I left my job I was at for 9 years, I was with a big company, and I immediately went into a fractional role working with several small businesses at the same time. The thing that I think is so great about it is that as a small business, you often, and even mid-sized business, you often cannot afford that full-time C-suite or expert hire. This is true for CFO, marketers, et cetera. And so the great thing about a fractional person is you can get 10, 20 hours from an expert at a rate you can afford, and it becomes that win-win where they're bringing that expertise from their, you know, other clients, past experiences to your business, and you're getting them for just a portion of their hours. It's usually a win-win because that fractional person is, you know, making the rate they want to make, but they also are usually somebody who likes the variety as well. So they like having several clients and getting to work on a lot of different projects at the same time.
Cool. That sounds like fun. It sounds really flexible for both sides. Mm-hmm. And for a nomad like yourself, you can kind of, you can be in a different place every week or every month, and you can work for a different client. And so that gives flexibility to you and your client companies. So sounds
absolutely
good.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Well, getting back to the new manager, how can the new manager or a relatively new manager work with the COO in the C-suite?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So in my experience, in my past role, you know, I worked for a big company and this was a big part of what I had to do. It's still a part of what I have to do, though often I'm a little more connected with the CEOs I'm working with. So I would say the biggest thing for me is getting buy-in on what you're working on, making sure that you're learning how to communicate with those people. I'm sure that's something you talk about over and over, Eric, is just those new managers learning how to communicate with their leaders. This is especially true with COOs and C-suites. Oftentimes you'll find these people, they obviously have a lot on their plate. We all do in management. But just making sure that you're learning, like if they are a fast-paced person, go in with a fast-paced presentation for them. Maybe during your regular meeting, you could say, hey, I'm working on something. I want your buy-in on this project. Can I pick your brain on it? For me, one of the biggest things that I learned is being really clear about what I'm asking for from that person up front. So for example, if I go in and say, I have a problem, there's a problem on the team, and I'm concerned about it, and I just start telling that leader about it, that leader is probably going to jump into action. And where I got myself burnt is I'm like, well, I don't need your help. I actually already have it handled, or I already have several ideas. I was just telling you so you weren't surprised. Say that up front. Like, go in and say, we have a problem. I've already handled it. This is an FYI. We have a problem. I think I have the solution. I wanted to run it by you. Or we have a problem and I have no idea what to do, and I'm here because I need your help as the leader. Same goes with ideas. Like, I have an idea. I'm already working on it. I wanted you to know. Like, using that same framework of like, here is what I'm here for and here's what I need from you for those people is really going to help. The other thing that I often... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
The other thing that I often say is if there are several C-suite members you need to get buy-in from, start with the person you know the best, get their feedback, and ask them to join you to help you finesse your presentation. Especially in a big organization, this is really key because those leaders will know their peers and they'll know like, hey, you've got to go to the marketer next. Here's what you need to bring to them. So start with that person you know well and then get their help.
This actually reminds me of my favorite HBR article that I mentioned probably every other episode. It was published in the 70s and then republished in the 90s. It's called Who's Got the Monkey? And one of the things that comes out of that article is a decision-making framework, kind of degrees of freedom for the employee or for the manager. Everywhere from sit on your hands and wait to be told what to do, all the way through to do it, don't even bother to tell me. And, you know, just having that discussion of, listen, you know, this is what I need from you. This is what I want from you. And at all times, I'm going to come to you with some idea of what we might do so that we're not starting with a blank canvas can be very useful.
I love that. Is that the one about, like, you said something about a monkey?
Yeah.
The article? My past leader used to say, don't leave your monkeys in my office. And I used to come in and say, I'm bringing my monkey in a cage, but I'm going to take him back. I just need your help with him.
That's beautiful. So yeah, the article is called Who's Got the Monkey by HBR, Harvard Business Review Press, and it is for free. So folks who are listening can download it and get it and review. Good stuff. That's nice. Good. Well, my next question is all about buy-in. And what I'd like to know is how can a new manager get buy-in from key stakeholders, including the COO, CMO, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I hit on this a little bit already, but for me, I think it's learning to communicate. That is always going to be key. But the other thing is, if you're going into these folks and you need to get buy-in for a project or something you're working on, do your research. It doesn't have to be 100% baked. In fact, I actually think it's best if it's not. If you take your leader something 70 to 80% and say, I need your feedback, somebody's going to be more bought in when they've contributed to it than if you just say, can I do this thing? Can I have this money? Can I whatever? So take it 70 or 80% baked and write it down. Like, I just can't tell you how many times people go in and they just start talking about an idea and the leader is like, they're doing 12 things. Write it down. Get in their office, write it on the board. Write it on a piece of paper and say, I started this. I got this 70%. Can you help me? And that way there's something to leave with the person as well. And then again, just get that buy-in from the person you know the best and ask for their help. I think getting people involved really makes a big difference.
And so it all comes back down to relationships. It's about networking strategically, getting to know people on a genuine level, not transactional, and then being able to leverage those relationships when it's time.
Absolutely. Yes, for sure.
Next, I'd like to talk about impact. And here I'd like to ask, how can operations leaders make an impact in their company?
I love this because in my experience and, you know, in talking to small business owners, I think operations people can get a bad rap as no people. And oftentimes that's because that's their job. They're an operations person's job is to kind of see out across everything. Like, we've got these goals, all these things are colliding, we have a problem, or we have these goals and we don't have the people to meet the goals, or we're working on this project and it's not going well, the right and left hand aren't talking. And that's great. If you're not careful, you can come across like you're a no person. So I always say for the operations leader, growth is to be able to say anything is possible. Yes, we can do that thing. And here are the things I see. Like, there's going to be hurdles. Are we going to overcome those hurdles? We can change business lines. Anything really is possible. And learning to start from that place is going to help you connect better with your owners and also make a bigger impact in your business. I mean, that ability to look out on the horizon and see problems and see hopefully potential opportunities is a gift. And if you can lean into that gift instead of make it seem like you're always just saying no and learn how to communicate about it in a way that feels positive and feels like you're helping the business, you're going to be able to make a big impact in your company.
And that's what I think a lot of managers want, is the ability to make some impact. And, mm-hmm. you know, by building those relationships and then thinking strategically about how can I use those relationships in order to move the company forward, that's going to be a win-win for everybody involved.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you're moving the company forward, everybody wins, in my opinion. And if you're able to show, hey, this is what I care about and I'm in it for everybody, then that's going to make a big difference.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. Then for my last question in this section, I'd like to know, how do you work with visionaries when you're operational? So if you've got that very sort of button-down approach to, you know, maybe trying to avoid being the no person, mm-hmm. but seeing across the organization and seeing what's coming, how do you work with those high-flying visionaries that maybe don't want to be tied down?
Yeah, so I think that this relationship can be really powerful if you learn how to communicate with each other in this way. A big thing for me is to ask them if you don't know. So I, as a, you know, ops-minded person, I love ideas and brainstorming, especially when it's in a brainstorming session. When we're in a meeting and we're trying to accomplish something and brainstorming starts, I get a little like flustered. And I have found that it's best if you just ask, like, hey, I hear you're ideating. Are we ideating right now? Do you want to go down this path? Do we want to derail this meeting? Or maybe like you're out to lunch. Hey, I hear you're running through all these ideas. Do you actually want to start a hot dog stand, or do you just want to like chat about this right now? And ask them to clarify, like, are they just rolling things off the top of their head? Because sometimes for operational type folks, it can feel like they're saying we're making a change, and they don't really mean it that way. They're just excited. They've got ideas. And so I've learned that by saying that, you give that person space to like bounce ideas off you and say, hey, would this hot dog stand work? Like, how do we get permits? What's it going to be like? Okay, anyways, back to our main marketing or whatever it is we do. We're not actually switching to a hot dog stand, right? And I think just asking those questions instead of just cutting them off at the pass is really great. And give them the space for those ideas. They brought you on because they want your feedback on those ideas, and you might be able to see problems that they don't see or see opportunities they don't see. So give them space for it and then be willing to say, hey, can we shut this down now? We've got to get back to this meeting. It feels important, but don't shut them down from the beginning.
That reminds me of kind of how things go in my little company, where I have discovered over the past year, I've discovered I'm a big ideas guy. Hmm. Don't put me down in the weeds because I won't do a good job of it. But I have folks in my team who are amazing at the detail and will catch little things like, okay, you changed this here. What about over there, there, and there? It's going to affect three other places. So having that mix of approaches on your team is super valuable, super important.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's why you're hiring people who are different than you, and you need those folks. It's just learning how to work together so it's a win-win and you're both using your strengths.
Yep, absolutely. Well, let's switch focus now and talk about you. And specifically, I understand that you've got a couple of pages that maybe you'd like to let folks know about.
Yeah, absolutely. My favorite place to connect with leaders and business owners, I don't know about you, but is LinkedIn. I feel like there's a lot of great things happening over there. So I'm on LinkedIn, Kristen Cummings, and my company Virtual COO is on there as well. And then I have a website, kristencummings.co, and I talk about travel on there and my business and just kind of a little bit of everything. So if you're interested in remote life, I'd love to talk to you more too.
Oh, good. Cause that's where we're going next.
I love it.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's do the lightning round. We've got some time, so let's have some fun with this.
Okay.
The first question is one that should be interesting. I can't wait to hear your answer to this one. And that is, if you could interview anyone, if you could sit in my seat and interview anyone, living or dead, who would it be and why?
Okay. I'm having a hard time. I have two. One is Taylor Swift, because I'm a huge Swiftie, and that just feels like the moment. But I'm going to tell you my secret one. And that is, I have always wanted, ever since I saw them together at a funeral, goofing off and being silly, which I know is weird, but I've always wanted to get George W. Bush and Michelle Obama together to have a conversation, because I felt like they built this little friendship sitting next to each other at events, and you see them kind of interacting. And I'm a peacemaker by nature, and I've always thought I'd love to see the two of them talking about how we could get along more in our country.
Okay. Well, I won't tell anybody. I'll keep that a secret.
Okay. Perfect. Until maybe they'll see this and they'll call and be like, we're ready.
Well, you know, it's entirely possible, because after all, luminaries do listen to this show. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'm trying to remember whose funeral was that, because I think I remember seeing that clip.
It was a former president or former president's wife, and they were sitting together like sharing candy. And I watched an interview actually once with George W. Bush, and he said because of the seating charts at those big events, the two of them are often next to each other. That's just the way it needs to be, because it's all very, you know, planned out. And so they end up by each other quite a bit.
Goofing off and sharing candy.
Mm-hmm.
Right on. That reminds me, Reagan had a favorite candy. Do you know what it was?
Mm-mm, I don't.
He loved Jelly Bellies. So back in the 80s, Jelly Bellies had just come on the market and they were a big thing, and he had them everywhere, apparently.
So there you go. Yeah. I guess there have to be some perks to being president, right?
Oh, I would not want that job. Oh.
No.
Oh.
No, especially not right now.
Nobody needs that kind of stress.
Mm-mm.
All right. So moving on, I know that you're on permanent vacation, but I'm going to try asking this question anyway. And what is your favorite vacation spot and why?
Well, I will tell you that as much as I love my life, where it does not feel like vacation, it feels like a trip to me, because we are still working, both my husband and I, and we have a 5-year-old and all the moves. So as much as I love it and all the travel, I would say that a vacation to me is a beach anywhere, really, but a beach with blue water where I can sit and read a book and spend the whole day.
Oh, yeah, I just came back from Puerto Vallarta, and we had this little section of sand that was kind of fenced off a little bit, and you know, we were right next to a gazebo where they did massages, and then they had our chairs and umbrella and stuff, and then it was kind of cut off from the rest of everybody, and it was fantastic because it was just so relaxing to just sit there. Like I brought a book, I didn't read it half the time. I just sat and looked. Looked mm-hmm. at the water, looked at the beach, looked at what was going on, watched the vendors walk up and down and try to sell things. It was really fun. And it's the most relaxed I've felt in a long time.
It is. It's the, there's nothing like it. I mean, in all our travels, my favorite stops have been beach towns. Mm-hmm. I feel like the ocean puts me back together.
Yep. Yeah, totally. As a scuba diver, that's how I feel as well. It's like when I'm in the water, I feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, I know you travel a lot, so this might be a hard question to answer, but where would you most like to travel that you haven't been yet?
Well, we're on this, we're in Europe for about 6 or 7 months, and I would say it's either Italy or Portugal. Those were the two places we're not getting to spend time on this trip, and that I would like to come back and do an extended period of time in.
Any particular part of those countries?
Coastal, obviously. In Italy, I want to visit the Amalfi Coast and all up the coast. Portugal, I'd love to stop in Lisbon. I keep hearing people say it's just beautiful and the culture is so neat. And so that's one of my goal trips too.
Nice. Yeah, I'd love to tour Europe. I'd love to load the family up and just go check it all out. That'd be so fun.
Listen, I'm here to say you should.
Okay. All right. Final question for you. What brings you the most joy in your life? And no fair just defaulting to your kid, because I know that's what I would say. So in addition to your kid, what else?
Okay, that's helpful, because I was definitely going to say my family, travel, obviously, and all things Taylor Swift. I have to mention it again.
Okay. All right.
I'm a Swiftie.
You're the first diehard Swiftie I've had on the show, so this is good stuff.
Okay. Well, there you go. Well, maybe I can connect with a new audience for you like she is with the NFL.
Yeah, right on. Cool. Well, Kristen, thank you so much. That was a marvelous conversation. One more time, just to be sure that people can find you, where do you hang out online?
Yeah, LinkedIn. It's Kristen Cummings, K-R-I-S-T-I-N, Cummings, and kristencummings.co.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Please subscribe to the show and connect with me on LinkedIn. Pick up my new book, Lead Like a Pro, The Essential Guide for New Managers, which is available on Amazon. We will catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Management Development Unlocked. Want more? Get a ton of insider tips and tools at GerardTrainingSolutions.com.